Welcome to Across the Spectrum, a podcast about special interests. I'm your host, Mark Spark, and today I'm talking to Ria Mara.
Hi, Ria.
Hi, Mark.
Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Would you like to tell the audience what we're talking about today?
Right, today we are talking about floristry.
And for anyone who may not have heard the term, can you tell us briefly what that is?
Yeah, floristry is very basically flower arranging. You make bouquets, arrangements, you work for weddings, funerals, events, stuff like that.
Yeah, so do you want to tell us a little bit about the basics of floristry?
Right, so obviously one of the big things of floristry is the simple act of making bouquets. I'm sure that most people listening have bought a bouquet of flowers for someone in their life, your mum on Mother's Day or, you know, someone for Valentine's Day. So the basics of, like, for example, bouquet making in the UK, at least, which is where we're based, uses the kind of English garden method, it's called. And like the idea with the English garden method is that you have things like radiating outwards from a point, which is why you'll notice that bouquets are the stems are often spiraled and they kind of come out into a nice round topped bouquet with very little space. So either flowers or foliage are going to be taking up all that space. So that's the method that we use in the UK. And that's like the most basic idea of a bouquet. And then, like I said, you have work for events like weddings and funerals. Funeral work is kind of morbidly the biggest kind of industry for a florist. Like, it's very rare that if you work in a floristry shop that there's that actually does funerals, that there's going to be a week go by without you doing any funeral work at all, which, like I said, a little bit morbid, but you know,
it does sound a bit grim, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's a fact of life, though, you know.
Yeah, that's just the statistics of living in a country with 55 million people.
Yeah. But with funeral work, there's obviously a lot of variety in regards to like design, shape, etc. You'll have the more basic things like wreaths, which is quite common for people who like knew or are close to the deceased, but not necessarily like immediate family or best friends or anything. Something that's nice, but a little like nicer than just a bouquet, but a little bit more like simple and standard. And you'll have things like coffin sprays, which will be kind of like diamond-shaped or teardrop-shaped, depending on how you go. They'll go on the coffin. Of course, like you'll have seen like names or mum or dad or something in letters. Also a very common one, and actually a lot more simple than you might think, because it's mostly just working with like a base. So you'll have chrysanthemums and you'll basically cover the letters in those. So it's time consuming to do like a whole name, but it's quite simple.
Yeah, easy, but long work.
Yeah. You'll have like, when it's like immediate family or best friends, you'll have a lot more like personalized and intricate work, and that's when lots of shapes will get involved, like depending on like hobbies and stuff. Like some people get, for example, if they're really into football, they'll get a football t-shirt, or they like gardening, then people will do things like to try and depict a little garden. When I was in college, did an artist's palette, so it was literally like a big paint palette with different colored flowers as the different paint splotches.
Oh, that's interesting.
Thank you. Actually, again, a little bit morbid, but funeral work can actually be very interesting to do.
Yeah.
Especially when it is something more personalized, which is like a duality with floristry. Like you do a work that, you know, you enjoy and that is creatively fulfilling. And it's not always necessarily for a great reason, but it does bring that kind of, you know, some comfort to that occasion.
Yeah.
As well. Yeah, and another big thing is wedding work, which, you know, is like another big thing. Not as frequent as other work, but it's a lot of work when you do have it because, well, you usually, well, for a bigger wedding, I'll say, you know, you'll have the bridal bouquet. Some people have bridesmaids having bouquets. You've got all the buttonholes for the groomsmen and the groom's party. Sometimes people want everyone at the wedding to have a buttonhole, and then that's a lot of buttonholes. You'll decorate the church or wherever they're actually having the ceremony, and then you'll be decorating the hall. So it's a lot of work doing a wedding. And of course, because everything needs to be like perfect on the day, it's not the kind of thing you're going to be able to make like a week in advance, for example.
Hmm.
The day before is going to kind of be when it's going to be the sweet spot.
Oh gosh. I'm just imagining staying up all night the night before the wedding, having to put all that together.
Yeah.
Basically.
Basically. Sometimes it's like, right, we're not sleeping tonight, fellas. We're just...
God. Yeah, no, I guess the flowers at a wedding are a thing a lot of people might not consciously notice, but the wedding would look very bereft without them.
Yeah. Like, imagine a wedding with no flowers. You'd be like, something not quite right here.
Yeah, I've never given full thought to how long it must take just to arrange the flowers.
Yeah, it's a lot of work for a wedding. The florist will actually go there themselves and set everything up. A lot of people running around on a wedding before you get there as a guest, and like everything is set up and lovely and you're like, oh, this is great. Like a few hours before, there was like 100 people running around very stressed trying to set everything up.
Yeah, I guess the key to doing something perfectly is that when people get there, they won't be thinking about how much work went into it, unless it's like,
yeah,
you know, an area they know a lot about. They'll just be going, oh yeah, how pretty.
Yeah, most people, if to be honest, most people will only notice like the flowers in two scenarios. One, if they look fantastic, in which case brilliant, and the other will be if like, oh, these look a bit like droopy and dead, and that's not what you want to hear. The last thing you want to hear is that, like, for example, the bride had an issue with her bouquet. Mm,
yeah, God.
That's disaster level.
Yeah, I've seen glimpses of wedding culture. I can imagine what it's like if something goes wrong with the bride's bouquet.
Yeah, that's a very big part of the wedding. And that's something that's quite enjoyable and quite engaging with the wedding aspect. I know I said with the funeral aspect, it's, you know, a lot of interest in design and also in knowing that, you know, you're bringing this, you're bringing something to an otherwise solemn occasion that, you know, just brings a little bit of colour and happiness to it, you know, knowing that people brought all these flowers and, you know, it's looking really beautiful. In regards to weddings, it's, as far as like the bridal bouquet, it's such a big part of typical wedding culture. You know, the bride will hold it, walk it. I'm being heteronormative here, but that like typically,
yes,
will have a bride coming in for a bridal bouquet, but anyone can have a bouquet.
Yeah.
In fact, I welcome designing like bouquets for like, if both people want a bouquet, I would welcome designing complimentary bouquets.
Oh, that sounds cool.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, because I don't know how much like individuality goes into making a lot of bouquets in a year.
Yeah, it depends what the person getting married really wants. You know, some people will want quite a standard, like, oh, just a bouquet of roses, all like in a nice tight posy, which is a little circle, basically, which is fine, obviously, if that's what you want and that's what works for your wedding. So you will have more typical ones like that. some people obviously want something that's a little bit more out there. Obviously, it depends on the theme of their wedding, what flowers they want, what colours they want. These days, people come in with a lot of Pinterest boards.
So that's not something to laugh at. I can see why they would bring things in from Pinterest.
Oh, gosh, no. Pinterest is like, literally, people come in and be like, okay, so here's my Pinterest board. And you're like, okay, I guess I'll follow your Pinterest board and see everything you've pinned.
So are they bringing in the board to give you an idea of the theme, or have they found pictures of a bouquet they would like you to replicate? What's happening there?
Both, depending. They'll be like, I want something like this. And you'll be like, okay. If anything, that's actually helpful, to be honest, to have someone bring something visual in. There's like, sometimes people come in and they've got no idea what they want, or they think they know what they want, but when it comes to telling you what it is they want,
they don't know any of the terms for it.
Somehow they don't know what's happening.
It's weird. It's almost as if they have no training in it.
No, yeah. Or they'll come in, oh, I've had in one of the shops I was in, a bride came in and she had a swatch of material and she wanted a flower that would match that material exactly.
God,
and
that's specific.
Flower she wanted. Yeah. And we were like, oh, okay. Well, right, well, we're just going to sift through every single flower under that vague colour description.
Hey, you know what's easier than matching exact flowers to colours? Complementary flowers.
Yeah. Or, you know, some people do. They want, like, things exact. Like, I've had people come in and they want, like, pure white flowers, and as in, like, white.
Oh,
and
God.
That is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, white is not a, like, very commonly naturally occurring colour.
No, like, white in flowers is typically what you'd consider an off-white.
Yeah.
It's like, wanting pure white is a challenge.
Do you have to have, like, special genetic breeds to get, like, pure white?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Is it one of those things that ties into the idea of white being the pure colour and they want to symbolise purity for something?
For some people, probably.
Mm.
I think for others, I remember that person saying that if it was off-white, it would clash with her dress. I don't know how that works, because white doesn't clash with anything. Because it's not a colour.
No.
For those of you listening who don't know, white and black are not actually colours.
Yes. White means... I'm not going to derail this with the science of white.
I'd just add that in case someone's listening going, what do you mean white's not a colour?
Yeah, white and black are non-colours.
They're tints and shades. Right, where was I? Right, yeah. So another challenge with weddings is that people will want, for example, they'll be like, oh, I'm getting married in November and I want tulips. All right, first of all, you want tulips in November. What if you want spring flowers?
Spring wedding.
Get married in the spring. Like, now I can get you tulips in November, but they're going to be expensive. They're going to be very expensive because they're going to have been grown in a greenhouse and there's going to be less of them being grown because they're out of season.
Yeah.
So they're going to be a lot more expensive. So
a lot of people don't really consider the seasonality of flowers.
Yeah. Like, some flowers have a longer seasonality or are more typically grown in greenhouses. For example, roses are available all year round.
Oh, yeah. Big industry roses. Yeah.
Roses are a very popular flower.
Because what will people do on Valentine's Day without their roses?
No, oh, don't even go there. Valentine's Day in florist is like, you've never seen so many red roses in your life. You almost can't believe it.
It's like that episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah, I was about to say that episode of The Simpsons, if anyone has watched it, when Homer gets dragged through the field of roses and he lands covered in thorns in front of a pile of roses and he's like, so many roses. It's like that.
It's got to be... I'm just imagining this combination of just, like, such an incredibly busy period with, like, almost no variation in what you're doing.
Yeah.
That's gotta be wild.
Valentine's Day is so busy. It is the busiest time of year for any florist.
And they all just want roses.
And they all want red rose bouquets. Half a dozen roses, a dozen roses. Some people want 50 or 100 roses. And listen, I know that you think you're being romantic and or showing off the cash you can splash on roses. A rose on Valentine's Day goes from being like a a pound fifty a rose to being like £3 a rose because of the high demand, and people will pay it. So like 100 rose bouquet will be just £300 for the roses, and then labor and other materials, you're looking like £350 to £400.
And it's all just roses.
And it's all just roses. And also about four florists had to get together in an attempt to hold this bouquet together and like try and make it look good.
I hardly dare ask, but did you have to do any 100 bouquet?
Yes, we had to do one. It was a nightmare.
As a florist, what would your reaction be if a partner of yours got you one of those?
I'd smack them with it.
Like, how could you do this to a florist?
Bradley, how could you do this to a florist? Would you do this to me?
My business is in flowers. How could you not just get me the flowers I like?
Do you know what I mean? Like, if I had to pick, if I had to rank flowers in order of preference, I'd have a tough time because I love so many flowers. But red roses would not be anywhere near the top of the list.
I mean, my favourites are daffodils, but I don't often see those in bouquets.
Oh, daffodil bouquet is lovely.
I don't know if I've seen a daffodil.
Yeah, I'd also be like, how dare you spend £400 on flowers on occasion? We could have gone out for dinner. No, we could have stayed in for takeaway.
Oh. It's a weird way to break up with a person.
Yeah, why did you break up? Well, he spent like over £400 on a 100 rose bouquet for me.
I can't believe you
spent... when I knew he had no actual love for me. Oh.
I can't believe you spent £400 just to get me to break up with you.
I would have done it for free.
I would have done it for free.
Yeah, Valentine's Day is like, well, I know that a lot of people like the whole traditional red roses on Valentine's Day thing, and if you do, obviously that's fair enough, whatever you like is fine, but also consider something else. You know, something a bit more unique. We do get the occasional white rose bouquet just to be like really interesting, and sometimes people want like roses and lilies. I'm not a fan of roses and lilies. To be honest, I'm not a fan of lilies in bouquets with other things, to be honest. I think lilies are best when they're, like, on their own, just lilies, and, like, left with quite a long stem, and, like, let the lily be the centre, you know?
Am I wrong in thinking that lilies are a funeral flower, or...?
Traditionally, they are, yeah. White lilies, especially, are traditionally a funeral flower, but...
What an interesting thing to bring to your partner on Valentine's Day.
Well, some people are less, like, concerned with stuff like that. Like, you'll get people who want a bouquet for a loved one and they'll want white and red and they won't think about that. And there'll be other people that they won't have white and red because of the whole blood and bandages association. White and red being, like, a war thing and for funerals. So, honestly, it just depends what people like.
Yeah.
What people think about.
Yeah, so... I take it Valentine's Day is not your favourite flower holiday.
Well, it's yes and no. Like, well, I wouldn't say it's my favourite anyway, but it's not all bad. Like, it's very busy, obviously, like I said.
Yeah.
So if you enjoy like being busy at work, then you know it's gonna be a hell of a day. You won't even have time to think about anything else. So if there's anything that's been plaguing your thoughts, then you just, at least for that day, you won't be thinking about it.
That's fair.
And like, you know, if you're obviously, if you enjoy doing what you do, then it, but it's a bit, it is a little bit tedious doing the same thing over and over again all day. I say all day, all 2 days, like you'll be doing it all day the day before as well.
Because you got to get ready for the day.
Oh, yeah. So it's a little bit like, oh, I wish I was doing literally anything else with any other flower. Also, like I said, it's very lucrative, so...
Ah, there is that.
You'll be like, ah, oh, tedious, but money, which sadly we need in this capitalist society, so...
We do.
You'll enjoy that.
Are there any, like, very typical bouquets for, like, Mother's Day, or do people tend to get a bit more varied with that?
Mother's Day, it will typically be, like, pink and white, but obviously some people will ask for different colours. If, obviously, they'll... more likely to go with kind of like, oh, my mum likes these flowers or these colours. But for a more like typical, oh, I want a Mother's Day bouquet, it will typically be pink and white, maybe some purples, you know. Next to Valentine's Day, Mother's Day is also like incredibly busy. But like I said, there is a bit more variety in Mother's Day, because some people will come in and be like, I want this specifically, or some people want to get their mother's planted designs, which I really enjoy doing planted designs. So I love doing that. And honestly, some people want like just a plant, which some florists do, you know, we know how to look after plants, so we have plants.
Yeah, that's probably a useful skill to have in floristry.
We can keep plants alive. Hooray! So yeah, there is more variety in Mother's Day, and it's almost as busy, but not quite. And it's also much less grating on the nerves than Valentine's Day can be.
And very few people want a bouquet of 100 flowers for their mums.
Yeah.
Okay, so out of all that, what do you think is like the most engaging aspect to work with when you're doing a bouquet or an arrangement?
Right, well, obviously there's the initial designing of a design. The initial designing of a design, that's a great sentence. The initial designing of an arrangement, depending on like what you've been given, sometimes it will be as simple as, I want something in this shape with these flowers in these colours. So you'll be given a basic of the materials, and you need to kind of decide, you know, how am I going to arrange this? What am I going to put where? How am I going to make this look its best? Sometimes you're given a bit more creativity. Like if someone says, for example, I want to spend £60 and I want it to be purples and whites, then you'll end up having a freedom of choice with flowers. So you get to decide, oh, what flowers do I think will really work with what I'm trying to do here?
It's a lot of wiggle room.
Yeah. So the initial like designing phase is good, because it gets your creative juices going and it makes you think like, okay, what can I do? What can I put where? And like, how can I make this look its best? And in regards to like making arrangements, my favorite things to do are like more like unique kind of arrangements, not something that would be like, oh, you know, you'll find this in a typical setting kind of things. But like when people want to get a bit more unique and have like an interesting shape, or maybe want a design to like look, say for example, like a bit gardeny and have a bit more natural, a lot of foliage, or working with other materials like twigs and like wood chips and making things look quite woodsy, something that's a bit more unique and that you can have a bit of more of a personal flair with. Or like combine, for example, potted and fresh flowers into a design to make something that is going to go from an arrangement to a plant. And how is it going to look once all the cut flowers are gone? How is what's left planted going to look? Yeah, so like more unique designs that really get you thinking about how you're going to do it and put your own like creativity in there. And make something that's like quite unique and that you can look at and be like, yeah, I really loved doing this.
Yeah, I do really like the idea of having, okay, that like you have the potted plant and you have to consider it looking good at the start and when you get rid of all the other flowers. It's like a time bouquet.
Yeah, I have done that before. So we had cut flowers and we also had a lot of succulents. So we did, basically, we made it look like a little garden with, like, we made kind of, like, fencing to go around it and used succulents and moss. I love moss.
Yeah.
But any florist that doesn't love moss, I don't understand you. And we mixed, like, succulents and moss, and we used, like, little pine cones and twigs to make it look, like, very woodsy and beautiful. And then kind of from that, thought, okay, how do we incorporate the fresh flowers in a way that they're going to look good, and then when they're gone we're going to have this nice potted scene still left.
It must be very rewarding just to be able to really engage in the arty side of the craft.
Yeah, it is. When, like, obviously, you know, if you're trying to do something and you can't get it quite right, it can be quite frustrating. But when you're there like, oh, how am I going to do this? And then you're like, oh, hold on a second. And you try something and it works. And you're like, yes, I did it. I was able to do what I want, because sometimes as well, like, you think, am I going to have to change what I want to do here? And you'll be like a bit stubborn and be like, no, I want to try and get it exactly like this.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, I think we probably all do.
I mean, anyone who's engaged in any kind of art is probably familiar.
Yeah, they're listening to this right now going, yeah.
With the practical versus the creative vision.
Yeah, like in my head it looks great. I just need to make it happen.
I just need to bend reality to my whim.
Snap my fingers, there you go. But yeah, like, for example, one of my favourite things I've ever done was when I was in college, and we were doing a kind of, the idea was that it was like a decoration for an event or a shop or something. And we had like a theme and we had to go with that. And my group had the theme of preening.
Ooh.
So our idea was basically to have a mannequin, which would have like a dress made of flowers, and have a peacock made of flowers, and have them either side of a frame which represented a mirror.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that was the basic idea. And we ended up doing like the dress, made the dress on the mannequin look like a peacock dress. So we had on one shoulder, we had like a peacock head, and obviously the dress came down like a peacock tail. And we had a flower peacock on the other side of the frame. We had the peacock that was made out of like chicken wire and then made with flowers. And we had the frame in between them that represented the mirror, obviously with flowers as well. And we used a lot of dry foliage for that design.
Mm.
Just because, you know, dry foliage dries so well. And by that, I mean, by foliage, I mean leaves, you know, like,
yes,
the greenery of a bouquet. Foliage dries super well. A lot of foliage still stays green and will stay looking quite nice for a long time, even though it's like completely dry. And it's very easy to dry as well. If you want to dry flowers, that's a more challenging thing to do, but foliage dries very easily and looks great. And we liked the way it looked, you know, it gave that kind of, I mean, I say feathery look, obviously it didn't look exactly like feathers because it's plants,
yeah,
but it, that kind of allusion to it.
Yeah. How long did it take to bring that piece together?
It took 2 days, not 2 full days.
To your blocking days.
Two college days to do. It was like, the mannequin is obviously human sized, and the dress was like ball gown proportions.
Wow.
And the peacock was very big as well. I don't know if it was life size to a peacock, because I haven't seen a peacock IRL in many years.
It's been a while.
But it was a big peacock.
I think the last time I saw peacocks was at Twin Lakes, which is a theme park here in England.
Are they big boys?
They're pretty big peacocks. Peahens are slightly smaller.
Right. Like I said, I don't know how realistically sized it was, but it was a big design. And of course, the frame was huge. The frame we made, we had kind of, we had two stands to serve as the legs. And we made the frame with like branches tied together onto the legs and made into a frame. And then of course, all the flowers and stuff on it. And although I said like we used a lot of dry ingredients, we did also use a lot of fresh flowers.
Yeah.
And a lot of people probably wonder when they look at things like that with like lots of fresh flowers, like where are they getting their water from? Lots of little water vials.
Wow.
That we need to put the flowers in, and then we need to hide the vial so that you never see it.
Wow.
That's a big part of floristry that a lot of people don't know about. Hiding things.
So when you see those big floats made from hundreds of flowers, you know those floats they have in like some American parades?
Yeah.
Are there just like little water vials hidden behind all of those flowers?
I'm not sure how they work, but I think what would make sense to me is for there to be a lot of oasis foam.
Okay.
And all the flowers to be stuck in the oasis foam. And of course, then that's wet and they drink from that. Yeah.
So oasis foam, is this just like a damp foam or?
Yeah, it's like a typically green foam that absorbs just so much water.
Okay.
And you make like arrangements in it. Like if it's not in a vase, then it's probably in foam.
Yeah.
And it will drink from the foam. And like I said, I've never made a parade float, but I imagine that's probably what they use.
Yeah. Man, it's wild to think about how, like, 90% of people won't ever think about the practical side.
Oh, yeah.
Of making these gigantic flower arrangements.
Yeah. One of the big things that you're marked on when you're doing practical work in floristry in college is if all your mechanics are hidden. If you've used string, wire, tape, whatever you've used to kind of keep an arrangement together or looking the way it does, and that you're obviously going to need to use, you're not allowed to see it. It needs to be hidden. Like, there must be no evidence that anything other than, like, the sheer power of the universe is keeping these flowers together.
Ideally, you want people to look at a thing and go, this sprang into existence, and I will never think about how.
Yeah, basically.
Oh.
So with this design, it was for the fresh flowers. They were all in little vials that we then had to, like, keep hidden, so that no one ever saw it. And they're like, this is just beautiful. And it was, obviously, this is a podcast, there's no visual, so I can't show you. But not to toot my own horn or anything, it was a very beautiful installation. It was really lovely. Obviously, we used, like, purples and blues and greens. And we did use actual peacock feathers, not too many, because obviously we were alluding to peacock feathers with flowers and foliage. But we did have a few in there to just kind of add to it, and it was all very, very beautiful. We were really proud of ourselves for doing that.
Floristry is a very interesting art form, because, like, if you are a painter or a sculptor, you might spend however many days or weeks working on a piece, whereas you just don't have that kind of luxury of time in floristry.
No,
working with living, like, things that are dying as you work.
Yeah, also, like, just in general, there's always a time constraint. Like, if someone comes into a shop and is like, I would like a bouquet, please, you don't want to leave them standing there for more than, like, 10-15 minutes.
No.
I mean, in an ideal world, you'll take all the time you want to make this bouquet, and, like, you'll really kind of, like, take your time, really feel it. And I know that's what you want to do, but you can't, because the customer is standing there and they want their flowers now. Like, you need to do it in 10-15 minutes.
This consumer society.
Yeah, how dare you not just wait in my shop for an hour?
I'm making art for you.
Call ahead of time, honestly. We have a phone number, just phone us, you know.
Is it your preference for people to call in orders rather than come to the counter and say, make this in 10 minutes, please?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Something for listeners to remember.
Because they'll phone in and they'll be like, oh, I want to order this. Can I pick it up in about an hour or two? And you'll be like, sure. So you can actually kind of, it's because when they walk in and ask, they're looking at you as well.
Oh God, yeah.
So not only are you like, okay, I want to be like 10 minutes doing this, so you're going to have to work very quickly, they're also there.
Yeah, which...
And they're looking at you, and you're just like, oh, God.
Yeah, this is an autistic podcast, so the listeners will know why this is a problem.
Yeah, performance anxiety. Like, yeah, I'll do it, but could you just, like, step outside and...
God, if you could just wait on the stoop for a few minutes, I'll get it done so much faster.
Yeah, just look at your phone.
Ideally, you'd have, like, a floristry waiting room for people.
Oh, yeah. If you could step into the waiting room.
Just sit down here, I'll get you a tea. Just sit down over here for an hour and I'll bring you your bouquet.
So I've had people that really, they proper stare at you while you're doing it. And on the one hand, like, I get it. If I see someone doing something interesting, I will look. And I'll be like, ooh, look. Also, it's like, please don't look at me. I'll mess up because you're looking at me.
I'm going to forget everything I know about floristry for the next 10 minutes. Time to work on autopilot.
What do you mean I studied this for 2 years? I don't even know what a flower is.
Tell me, what is rose?
What is the colour pink?
I guess the upside is, even though you have so many people on Valentine's Day, you don't need to put too much conscious thought into it while they're standing there waiting for it.
Listen, if you come in on Valentine's Day, like, can I have some roses, please? And you haven't ordered them in advance. First of all, if it's after, like, midday, the odds of you even getting a flower is so low.
So That person has clearly forgotten to get something up to this point.
Yeah. Honestly, like, I've had people, like, walk into a shop, and it's, like, 6 o'clock in the evening on Valentine's Day. They haven't ordered anything. Can I have some roses? No. No, you can't have some roses. There are no more roses. There are no more roses anywhere that someone has not already paid for.
England is out of roses. We're done.
England is out of roses. Yeah, we have non-red roses, possibly. We have other flowers. We don't have many of them because other desperate people came in 2 hours ago. We told them the same thing.
I have a lily left.
They'll get, like, annoyed at you. Why don't you have roses? Well, you see, everyone else pre-ordered theirs a month ago. We ordered extras, but other people had the sense to come in the morning.
Something for listeners to remember.
Yes, listeners, if you are planning on getting your significant other a bouquet of red roses this Valentine's Day, please consider calling in advance and ordering your flowers.
Please consider, like, literally any other flower.
Or consider any other flower.
Get your significant other some daisies, please.
Daisies are lovely.
Daisies are lovely.
It's in February, you know. So there are some spring flowers starting.
Is there anything in the field in general that you feel like isn't used very much or you'd like to see more of?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Next question.
Yeah, that's it. That's next question. Great discussion. But like I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, but here in the UK, we typically use the English garden method of like flower arranging, which basically, you know, if you live in the UK and you've seen flowers, like, you know, like what that means. Typical bouquets, rounded work, often symmetrical, but not necessarily, obviously. We work in proportions of 1/3 and 2/3, which would mean, for example, a bouquet. 2/3 of what you're looking at in height is going to be the flowers and the other materials. And 1/3 is going to be the length of the stems.
Yeah.
Just as an example. So things are nice and balanced. And there's often like a very minimal space in between materials. So people want the bouquet to look as full as possible. Something that you do sometimes, you know, we learn in college and you'll do it sometimes in maybe more boutique-y kinds of floristry shops in London will be European style, which we call form linear.
Yeah.
And form linear works with a lot of negative space. So you'll have like very few materials and there'll be lots of space in the design. And it actually works, oddly enough, with the Fibonacci numbers.
Ah, gotta love the Fibonacci sequence.
Yeah, you probably wouldn't think has anything to do with flowers, but you know, it's a natural thing. So the Fibonacci numbers you work with in floristry will typically be 3, 5, and 8.
Yeah.
But obviously you can go above that to 13. And I can't remember what comes next.
21.
Off the top of my head.
13 plus 8.
0, 1, and 2 will be considered ground. So anything that doesn't rise very high. So, for example, moss or very low leaves. That will be your 2. And then you'll have your 3, which will be not very far off of the bottom of the design. Your 5, which will be a bit higher. And your 8, which will be even higher. And of course, if you keep going, then it will just get higher and higher.
You're getting into some big bouquets at that point.
Yeah. Or arrangements. I mean, you can make a full millennia bouquet, but let me tell you, it is hard. Because the space is so important and it's kind of triangular, but you'll have, for example, you'll have your 8 and it will be standing like straight up. I'm doing hand gestures, even though no one can see me. your 8 will be standing straight up and your 5 will be next to it going outwards.
Mm.
And then your 3 will be like in front of your 8 going kind of forwards and to the side.
Yeah, I can see how that would be challenging to arrange in a bouquet.
Yeah, it's kind of like triangular. And the space in between them is really important. Something important with form linear is that there be the space and like that everything's not just like touching together. In a bouquet, obviously, it has to touch at some point. Trying to keep as much space as possible in a bouquet. It's not impossible. I've done it. But it's difficult. So if you want form linear, then typically you'll go for an arrangement.
Yeah.
In which case there will be almost no touching. of the flower. But something that, like I said, it's not very utilized in England because it's almost like the opposite of what people in England kind of want, where they want like as much flower as their money can buy. And they want a nice full bouquet with loads of material if possible. Whereas with Form Linear, you're working with very few materials and a lot of negative space. But one thing about Form Linear that I really like is this idea of respecting the stem. So it's basically appreciating flowers as they are naturally. Like if a stem is a bit wonky, that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Use that, you know? You use it to kind of add rhythm to your design. So, you know, if it wonks a little bit to the left, then that's great. Have that move to the left and have that be the movement of the piece, you know? Another thing is which materials you use where is very important, because as they are in nature is how you have to translate it into the design. For example, if you've got two flowers and flower one in nature grows taller than flower two, then in the design, flower one has to be standing taller than flower two because that's how it grows naturally.
Yeah.
So whilst on the one hand, it's a bit like, oh, numbers and specific placements and stuff, it's also a lot of appreciation for nature in there as well. And how, like, just appreciating the beauty of nature, which is why you'll have a lot less material and why you'll see the full stem and not just the flowers on top, because you're appreciating every part of the flower and the beauty that it has, and not just this particular part that you want to see. And also we're going to cram a whole lot of other stuff in it as well. So for those reasons, I actually really quite like Form Linear. And like I said, it's not very popular in Britain because people want as much flower as they can buy for their money. And, you know, they, over here, more materials means you spent more money. So people don't want to spend probably the same amount of money on something with so much less flowers. And the reason why something Form Linear will cost what someone will think is more than, you know, a typical bouquet is because, one thing, there's a lot of materials involved that you're not necessarily seeing because it's part of what's keeping the design together. And so it's all hidden materials and, you know, vases or bowls, things like that. And also because you're using so few materials, you will tend to use things that are a bit more expensive and a bit bigger. Tropical flowers are very popular in Form Linear. If you've ever seen like Birds of Paradise, for example, you know, it's big, it's unusually shaped, it's, you know, bold. So it's kind of ideal for something like Form Linear because you just put that there and already there on its own is something like really eye-catching, really beautiful to look at. So that's something that puts people off buying it because they think, oh, if I want to spend £50, then I don't want there to just be like seven flowers in this design. I want more flowers.
Because regardless of how many flowers you put into it, what you're paying for is the visual element.
Yeah.
So I feel like it shouldn't matter how many materials are used in the visual thing you paid for. It would be like buying a painting and going, oh, but they used less paint in this one.
Yeah, but people think like, oh, I'm buying the flowers. Like, the flowers are just one thing that you're buying, you know. You're buying my time, my skill.
Yeah.
the how pretty it looks.
The flowers are just the medium.
Yeah. Like you said, with the painting thing, you're not buying the paint, you're buying the painting. You're not buying the flowers, you're buying the arrangement. But people don't typically think like that, over here at least. And it's not very popular amongst florists in Britain to actually do. I was the only one in my class in college who actually enjoyed doing Form Linear.
That's a shame.
Everyone else hated it.
It sounds like a neat concept.
Yeah, it is more challenging to do. I don't know if because it was something that we didn't learn until we'd had like a year of experience under our belts, so that we were quite used to the British garden way of doing it. And then this was something that we were starting from scratch and made us feel like beginners again. Or if it actually is more difficult, but it's definitely a different set of challenges. And a lot of people are like, oh, I don't like this, I don't want to do this. But you will, like I said, you'll sometimes find it in like boutique-y places in London.
Yeah.
Where like, it's kind of like, oh, it's European, you know. We'll sell it to them by like, oh, it's European.
Yes. all the rage in Europe.
Oh, yeah. It's the big thing. I mean, it is, but, you know. So, yeah, so that's something that, like, we don't see and use a whole lot over here, but I quite enjoy, and that I think it's a great technique that I think that people underappreciate and maybe would appreciate more if they both kind of like had maybe a different understanding of what, you know, a flower arrangement should be.
Mm.
And also maybe, again, that appreciation of the fact that not paying for flowers, you're paying for a lot more than that. I mean, you know, artists of any kind, you're going to have heard at some point in your life, oh, but the materials cost this. It's like, yeah, but you're not buying the materials. You're buying my labor.
Yeah,
you're buying
yeah.
my skill. You're buying my creativity.
You're paying for the time I spent.
You know, the years I spent learning how to do this just for you to come in and disrespect me like this.
So what have been some of your favourite pieces of floristry that you've seen in your life?
So obviously I spoke earlier about the peacock installment that I did at college. That by far my favourite thing that I've ever personally worked on, because it's like,
yeah.
it's something like not very typical, something more out there and unique and using lots of like different materials and techniques, which is something that I really enjoy doing. I'd like, honestly, if I would say that like bouquet making is to me like the least interesting part of floristry. That's something that a lot of people kind of think of immediately, but to me it's like, oh, you know, put together a bouquet. There's not much great creativity in that goes into that. Things that take a lot of creativity, a lot of thinking, like how am I going to make this work, how am I going to design this, are the things that I love the most. As far as like up things that I've seen, there, I probably should have looked this up because I can't remember the name, but there was this kind of like avant-garde like event that they do annually. I'm not sure what it's called. And something that they do is have a florist design a kind of headdress out of like flowers and foliage and like floral material. Yeah. And it needs to be something, like I said, very avant-garde. But also it needs to be something that the person can actually wear, that will actually like stay on their head, which is, you know, we were told about it. None of us put a design in because that's something that you need a lot of experience and a lot of confidence under your belt to do something like that.
Yeah.
And none of us were there yet, basically. And, you know, it's something that's very unusual and it's very elaborate and kind of amazing, and you look at it and you're like, oh gosh, how did they do that? Because again, it needs to be all put together and on somebody's head, and you're not allowed to see how that happened. If we see one clip or wire or anything, it's all over. So essentially, like anything that's quite unique, different, like very kind of artsy, maybe a bit out there, a lot of very natural stuff as well. I love work that's really heavy in foliage. I know a lot of people, they're like focused on the flowers, but I'm like, you know, you've got those beautiful leaves and foliage of like all these different shapes and like colours and stuff. And like, it adds so much. And I think that it just gives that this really nice, natural, almost like woodsy kind of look. And that's something that I really enjoy seeing.
Yeah, it does sound cool. So we've sort of touched on this a few times so far, I think. Like, what do you consider the most rewarding work, personally?
Right, yeah. So I've spoken a bit about, like, the personal satisfaction that you get from thinking, okay, here's what I want to do and how am I going to do it? And, like, taking that image from your head and making it in reality and seeing that, yeah, you actually did manage to make it work, even though maybe it was a bit tricky and maybe it didn't go exactly how you planned, but, you know, you managed to work it in a way that, oh, you know, this looks really good and I'm really pleased with it. So, you know, there's that personal satisfaction from, you know I've done this well and I'm pleased with how it looks. But there's also, you know, the satisfaction of the customer is very rewarding as well. You know, if you've worked hard on a design and then the customer comes in and is like, oh, this is beautiful, I really love it. You know, this like validation, you know, and, you know, obviously you're pleased that the person is pleased. And especially with an event like a wedding, for example, you know, people are, oh, the hall looks beautiful, the flowers are beautiful, the bridal bouquet is beautiful, you know, and like, ah, oh, yeah, you know, people really appreciating like so much work that I've put in, and knowing that, you know, what you've done has had a big impact on the day. Like something I said earlier, you know, the bouquet in a traditional wedding is, you know, a very big part of the wedding, you know, the typically the bride, but anyone will walk down the aisle holding it. Later at the wedding, there's the whole throwing the bouquet and someone catching it. You know, it's got a lot of traditions within the wedding. So you know that your work is a big part of the day.
Yeah.
And something that, you know, if the person isn't completely happy with it, it would obviously be quite upsetting. But if they are really happy with it, then you're like, ah, oh, yeah, you know, I've contributed something to this person's big day that has brought them, you know, happiness. So that's obviously a great feeling. And on the other side of the spectrum, sorry, I couldn't help myself. On the other side of the spectrum is, you know, on occasions like funerals where, you know, this is a horrible day, you know, but people are using flowers and, you know, the arrangements and designs to like express the love that they have for that person that isn't with them anymore. And, you know, yeah, it's like that, you know, they'll
like a way of honoring them.
Be like, oh, they liked these colors, or they like these flowers, or this was their hobby, and can we do something that looks like that? Or if, for example, if you're religious, then having a religious symbol might probably feel quite important to you. And, you know, just something that you look at it and you think, you know, oh, they would really like this, or that brings you comfort to know, like, oh, look at how many people went and got flowers and sent them for this person because they meant so much to them, you know. And it's nice to be able to kind of be there for the people on such a difficult day and know that you're bringing something with you that, you know, obviously it doesn't like, oh, cheer them up or anything, but it, you know, it makes them know that like the person was loved and the people are thinking about the person, honoring the person. And even beyond the initial day, you know, people will buy flowers, put them, you know, where someone's been laid to rest on any day of the year. And typically we associate a grave with flowers on it as the grave of someone who's loved and someone who's, you know, being visited and thought of, you know, so there's that association as well.
It's cool to be part of working in floristry because flowers have such an inherent cultural meaning to us of expressing a bond or like affection or love.
You're there for like the best and worst moments of people's lives, which is weird and sometimes, you know, very sad, of course, but sometimes quite amazing. So it's odd like that. You really feel like you're part of like the big moments, whether they be good or bad. You're like there for them, you know?
Yeah. And that's really cool.
Because obviously that doesn't even bring into account other things like births of children or birthdays or big events. Like if you're religious, if there's any kind of religious event that you have for a person that you'll want decorated with flowers, you know, you're a part of so many kind of stepping stones in life. And sometimes it's a really great happy event and sometimes it's a terrible solemn event, but you're always kind of a part of that.
It's a really cool thing to take a step back from and really think about, isn't it?
Yeah, because most people probably don't think about how involved like a florist will be in stuff like this, but when you think about it, like how many big events involve flowers of some kind?
Pretty much all of them,
you know. And presuming that you haven't gone and just bought some cheap bouquet at the supermarket, don't do that. Support your local florist. It costs a bit more, but also the bouquet is so much better.
Or, you know, you could have just won the Great British Bake Off.
Oh.
I probably won't put that in the podcast. I just wanted to bring it up because I know it's like one thing that...
Put it in the podcast. Let the people know. The bouquets they give the finalists in the Great British Bake Off are terrible.
Cool. For like the bonus content, can you tell us what's so bad about Great British Bake Off bouquets?
It's like they look like they just grabbed every flower they liked and just chucked it together. You'll have like two flowers just sticking up like half a meter higher than the other flowers. It just looks ridiculous. I took a screenshot and sent it to my college group, and we were all like, what is this? The best bakers in the country, but they couldn't be bothered to hire a decent florist.
Okay.
I now have this vision of like the person who did the flowers listening to this and coming for me.
Okay. So what advice would you give to anyone who is interested in learning more about floristry?
So obviously, like I said, we're UK based, so any advice I give is going to be from this perspective. I don't know how things work where other people are from. On a more simple note, you know, there's online tutorials on, you know, YouTube and stuff that you can look up and like see people working flowers and kind of see like things that go into arrangements and stuff and like how they work. There's online classes on websites like Skillshare that will teach you a few things. So like looking into things like that. Obviously, it's either free or, you know, maybe it's something that you're on already, but you just haven't looked up specifically classes for floristry. So you can look into that and see if, like, it appeals to you just from, like, a theoretical standpoint. In the UK, colleges that offer floristry courses will often offer, like, short taster courses. Like, so you'll pay, say, I don't know, £100, and you'll go there for a full day, and that'll cover, you know, the lesson and all the materials, and they'll teach you how to make a few like simple things. And so you can see kind of on a more practical level, like, oh, are you enjoying this? Like, how does it feel actually getting engaged with it? Also, if you didn't want to do that, you could even just go to a wholesaler, buy some materials of your own, maybe follow an online tutorial. And, you know, see, like, am I enjoying this? Like, can I see myself really getting into this? So, you know, there's a few avenues you can go down to kind of see, you know, is this something that I really want to pursue? As far as, like, actually learning, if you've decided you do want to do floristry, typically you will go to college and do a level two, a level three. You'll do a level two, then you'll do a level three. But very few people skip straight to level three. It's quite difficult to do. And most people won't start with a level one unless you're coming straight out of school. You can also do apprenticeships, but there are very, very few floristry apprenticeships going. So very unlikely you'll get one, but it is a possibility that you can pursue if like being an apprenticeship appeals to you more than going to college. Yeah, so then that's just like basic advice I can think if you're thinking about it. But if you are thinking about floristry, then I do obviously highly recommend it. You know, it's something that I'm really passionate about. It's something that I really enjoy. And we always could do with more good florists, you know? We've got to battle the supermarkets.
just replace whoever is making bouquets for the Great British Bake Off.
Yeah, we have to replace that person too. And literally everyone in any kind of TV show or film, when someone comes up with a bouquet, 9 times out of 10, you know that no florist was involved in that. We need that to be an official job role, you know, the movie florist. Like, just like you have professional makeup artists in films, we need a professional florist doing the flowers.
Just hire a florist.
Hire a florist.
Just, if you need a bouquet for a prop, just go to the closest florist and get one.
Yeah. Just, I beg of you, have a professional be behind it. Because we know, we can see it. Also, if you think that floristry is in any way glamorous, then I strongly suggest that you rethink your stance, because it is not. I have mentioned already, like I've mentioned in this podcast, you know, there's a lot of time goes into doing a lot of floristry event. Like if you're doing a wedding and stuff like that, there's a lot of time that goes into it. There's a lot of basically hiding all your mechanics. It needs to look beautiful, but we can't see what's making it look like that. And also it's just messy, you know. You're working with like live materials, you're gonna get green everywhere, you know. There's gonna be flowers going moldy in the bucket, and you need to deal with that, and you need to deal with the stinky flower water when you change it, you know. And at the end of the day, you're gonna be dirty. Like, you're going to have dirt on your hands and leaves in your hair, and you're going to be scratched up and stabbed by the 2 million roses on Valentine's Day. Oh. And yeah, like the end result is beautiful, but getting there was a bit of a slog. You're working with nature at the end of the day. So if you think it's like some really glamorous kind, do you know how much of floristry involves rummaging through a bin? I never thought it before I started, and you're probably not thinking it either. But sometimes you're making an arrangement and you need like just like one more leaf or one more tiny flower head, and you've run out of material and you're just looking through the bin of your cutoffs thinking, is there a cutoff that I can make work for this? Is there possibly a leaf that I didn't think was good enough, but now that I'm desperate is now good enough I can use? And you will go through the bin for it.
Thank you so much for being here today, Ria. It's been great.
I've had a lot of fun. Thank you.
Just as a final thing to sign off the podcast with, are there any fictional characters that you relate to, particularly as an autistic person?
The character I think that I have personally related to most, I think, is probably Kat from 10 Things I Hate About You.
Remind me which character Pat is?
Kat, the main character, the girl.
Right, Kat. Sorry, I kept hearing Pat.
No, Kat.
Okay, that's an interesting take. I'd never considered that.
Yeah, I really see myself in her. Basically, if you've watched 10 Things I Hate About You and you're wondering what I'm like in general, that's what I'm like.
Good to know.
Except a florist. And except, like, I wouldn't have, basically several characters would not have come out of the other end unscathed, if it were me. But other than that, you know, she's a very kind of like tempestuous character. She's very much like, oh, if you carry on like that, then you'll never have a boyfriend kind of character. You know what I mean? Like, not what people think a lady should be like.
Yes, I understand.
Which is not me, because I'm not a lady.
Yes, no, it's been, this has been great.
Yeah, it's been a great episode. I've had a lot of fun.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into this first episode. It's so exciting to finally share the show with you. If you had fun hanging out with Ria today, you can find her Tumblr and Twitter accounts in the episode description below. And if you're interested in seeing some of her floristry work, you can find her on Instagram as Cassia Flore. You'll also find links to the contributing artists to the show. Our cover art was designed and drawn by the awesome Eric Monk-Steele, who creates beautiful art on Tumblr and Instagram. Our intro and outro themes were composed by the phenomenal Maki Yamazaki, who has more incredible music on Bandcamp, and who you can support on Patreon. That's it for now, listeners. Join me next week when I'll be talking to Sparky Lark Dragon about Echo the Dolphin. Until then, stay safe, stay you, and keep sharing.